is Anaheim. Let's do it. 2024 style. No rider in the 50-year history has ever won on debut. Jet Lawrence has now.
To conquer the best in the world.
Jet Lawrence, the 2024 Supercross champion.
Yeah, time for a season in review of Monster Energy AMA Supercross here on SMX Insider. We are the Jasons, Wygant and Thomas. It's so funny how this 450 campaign at least worked out, JT. It was a wild up and down season. We had more winners than probably expected, closer points than we probably expected. But at the same time, I almost feel like the inevitable conclusion all along was Jet Lawrence is probably going to do this, and he did.
Yeah, he was my prediction and my pick to win. I have this thing, maybe you've heard this before, where I generally like to pick the best rider in the class to win the championship, and Jet did just that. All the things we thought he was capable of. In the end, it was an up and down series for him, but he got the job done, and kudos to Jet Lawrence.
Yeah, and I think the competition knows, man. We got the rookie mistakes we were hoping for, couldn't capitalize. It's only going to be harder in the future. And speaking of future, let's talk about the next group of champions. So you have Tom Vial, who I don't think anyone was picking before the season to be 250 East champ, and RJ Hampshire, who many, including you, were picking. And shout out to Cole Davies, who won the Supercross Futures event. Drew Adams is probably the favorite there, but he crashed while leading. Good job by Davies, the New Zealand kid, to win that. But let's talk Hampshire first, JT. You said all along, who's the best guy besides Jet Lawrence last year? Jet moves to 450s. Here you go. RJ's champ.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, this was a great weekend if you're Austrian, right? They sweep all three championships. And for RJ, it's been a long time coming. You know, we knew that most of the time, the most likely person to beat RJ is RJ. And this year, he did a great job of avoiding that, especially down the stretch towards the end of the season. Even if you were a Levi Kitchen fan, I think it was very difficult for anyone there to just feel happy for RJ after years of trying to get this done.
Here's one unpredictable thing. The only 250 rider with true championship experience was Tom Vial, and he ended up having the shakiest moments of any of the contenders with that heat race. It was getting a little dicey.
Yeah, it just had to be nerves, right? And I think he made mention to others about how sketchy the track was in that heat race, and he didn't want to make the fatal mistake in the heat race, put himself into the LCQ where we know anything goes. Just like we saw from Cody Schock, that could have very easily been Tom Vial, where he crashes because he's pushing too hard. In the end, he walked the tightrope he needed to do, he got the job done, and now he's your 250 East Coast Supercross champion.
Yeah, and thanks to those guys for keeping it exciting right down to the end. We'll review all of it, not just the finale at Salt Lake, but the entire Monster Energy Supercross run in this episode. Okay, SMX facts time. Let's bring Clinton Fowler on. You're the stats guy. We've completed one leg of the 2024 championship Monster Energy Supercross. Give me the stat that sticks out the most to you.
Well, it has to be the most obvious one, which is Jet Lawrence being the third rookie to win the Premier Class title in the history. 50 years, and we've only had it three times. Jeremy McGrath in 1993, Ryan Dungey in 2010, and now Jet Lawrence in 2024. JT, obviously, incredibly impressive season. I thought it was pretty interesting looking at the numbers to see. It was almost like they were podium or bust in both Jeremy McGrath's season and Jet Lawrence's, where Jeremy had 10 wins and 12 podiums. Jet had 8 wins and 10 podiums. But what do you see and how do you rate these guys when you look at the three rookie seasons?
Well, I kind of see McGrath and Jet very similarly. They both felt like they were in a breakout mode and ready to go on a run of championships here. And really the learning moments were what caused Jet to be off the podium or win. You know, if everything was equal and he got a decent start, didn't crash, he usually won or very, very close. It was the moments where he maybe pushed the limit a little bit too much, wanted to get the win. Think about Anaheim 2. poor decision-making at times, those are the ones that really cost him. But when everything was equal and he was just left to his own devices, he was the best rider in the class and he often won the race. So that's very much how I saw McGrath in 93. Now, Ryan Dungey was a little bit different. I think Ryan Dungey often won through consistency. He always avoided the critical mistake. That was his calling card. Yes, he was incredibly talented. Yes, he was fast. But every time someone else would slip up, guess what? Ryan Dungey capitalized. So in that way, I feel like the three are a little bit different.
Let's move on from Jet. I kind of vaguely recall throughout the season a Eli Tomac podium tracker. Where are we with that?
It's pretty impressive. Last year, it was all about the wins for Eli Tomac. Now it's all about the podiums. Eli Tomac, this season, with his six podiums, becomes the most visited to the podium rider in the history of the sport. That's both Supercross and Motocross. That's the small bike class and the Premier class. He's got 218 podiums. So just absolutely impressive. He passes Ricky Carmichael, who had 216 podiums. So rare air. He's also now second all-time in Premier class combined, second in Pro Motocross. He's third, tied with Ryan Dungey in Supercross Premier class. So just absolutely impressive. JT, when I look at this, there's an interesting piece on longevity, but what do you think is interesting about Eli here starting to hit into that record-breaking podium streak stuff?
Well, when I look at riders of Eli's caliber, I think they fall into two different categories. One, there's riders that get all these stats through accumulation. You know, maybe they never win that title, but they've just been an elite rider for years and years. You think about a guy like maybe Kevin Windham could fall into that category. Fantastic rider, didn't get the championships, but his stats are really impressive because of the length of his career. Eli Tomac has had both, right? There were certain times that he was absolutely considered the best rider on the planet, at least in America, without question. But he also has this accumulation of stats because he's been there for so long. So he is that rare breed that has the, you know, decade plus of elite status, plus all of the championships and wins to go along with it. So he kind of falls into this very rare category of having both.
Yeah, I circle all the way back to this longevity thing and how much more common it is now. And that's going to be the real thing. If Jet Lawrence gets anywhere close to that Jeremy McGrath 72 record, McGrath was winning races at, for his time, an extremely old age, like 28. Now it's totally normal for riders to go into their 30s, and you got a crazy stat to illustrate that, Clinton.
Right. Yeah, there's incredible. There's five riders now that are in the top 15 of the all-time Supercross starts. Active riders. You got Eli Tomac at 7th all-time. You got Kyle Chisholm at 9th. Justin Barcia, 10th. Jason Anderson, 14th. Ken Roczen, 15. And in many ways, this is one of those accumulation stats. But I think the important piece here is it demonstrates the depth of the field. There's just a ton of guys that have been riding, and quite frankly, at a very competitive level. Those five riders combined for nearly 100 wins, right? So JT, just absolutely impressive to see these sort of riders still riding, still getting wins, still getting podiums. What's that mean moving forward?
Well, I love the added longevity for these riders. And you wonder if it's the pressure cooker that Ricky Carmichael and Ryan Villopoto and Ryan Dungey lived under. Is that not so much of a thing for these guys? A guy like Jason Anderson, did they have that spotlight on them where it was winner bust all the time? And not having that, did it allow them to maybe stick around a little bit longer? But I also think that we've come a long way. You think about the science behind health and training and all these things, maybe that's adding a little bit longer life to these riders as far as, you know, the livelihood that they can spend in this. Maybe not training quite as hard, but maybe training a little bit smarter. But the great thing is that the fans and all three of us get to watch these stars stick around. They're not retiring at 27 anymore. They're retiring in their earlier mid-30s, which is just another decade of excellence for us to get to witness.
Clinton, great data. We'll talk motocross next week.
Thanks, guys.
Big interview time. We've grabbed Ian Harrison, who's known on the outside as the team manager for the Red Bull KTM team, but they've got a hand in what goes on at Husqvarna and the GasGas squads as well. We got to congratulate you. This is a group of powerhouse 250 teams. and you ended up with both titles. I didn't even realize that was in play until Nashville and RJ Hampshire mentioned how big it was for you to have both red plates. Just tell me about the journey to get here over the last few years with this bike and these riders.
Yeah, it has been a journey. You're right, because the last time we won on a KTM was with Marvin in 2015, and the last time with Husqvarna was 2017 with Osborne. Mm-hmm. So it has been a little while. We've had a lot of changes internally with having the team outside and then back inside. And anyway, long story short, it was super nice to get those two red plates in I think it was Birmingham, around there, somewhere around that time. And then for the guys to fight all the way through, because I felt like Kawasaki was very, very strong, and of course Yamaha too. And so it was a challenging race, but to come out victorious is cool, and especially after a 9-year dry spell. So yeah, we're really excited about them, and it was good.
So speaking of the motorcycles, I've heard, you know, Tom Vial mention a few times earlier this season that he felt a lot more comfortable on the motorcycle in 2024. You know, he came off of a platform in Europe that, you know, they don't have the restrictions that we do. They have a lot more flexibility in the motorcycle that they can build. What did you guys really work on this off season, if anything, to get him more comfortable or really make strides? Because the difference in his riding was pretty noticeable, and he made mention that he felt more comfortable. So I think that gives you guys a lot of credit, but what was going on behind the scenes with that?
I think the biggest thing, Jason, would be the engine package. We really put our heads down and we worked hard on that, and especially the guys in Austria, improving it in a lot of different areas, because as you know, the GPs is very different to a supercross. So there's not much you can bring from there with regard to suspension package that's going to help you over here. You truly are riding something different. So he needed a year under his belt to just get through it and see how it all works. And moving from another country to the US and competing in something that's completely different, it doesn't matter if you're from Australia, from Europe, or from anywhere, it's a massive adjustment, you know, of just adapting to everything and the fast pace and all of that. And I take my hat off to Tom. He's done an outstanding job. He had a lot of pressure. Things did work in our favor this year, with a lot of tracks getting really rough, and I think his technical riding, generally the French in particular, seem to be very technical riders, and I think that benefited him. A lot of the times we were able to jump the whoops. That definitely helped him. But him winning two races and getting 3 seconds and coming from nearly, I thought we were out of it after the first race. You know, I thought it was done. There's no way I can believe you can win a Supercross title and miss one whole round, especially in a regional championship. But he did it, and I'm really proud of him. And at this last round, yes, it was tough, but there was a lot of pressure on his shoulders, you know, and he came through. So good for him.
So great success on the 250s. Of course, I got to ask you about Chase Sexton's season, which turned good here at the end. How did you keep the train on the tracks? Because I'm sure the goal would have been to keep the number one plate, win a whole bunch of races. How did you keep the nose to the grindstone, keep everybody together to get to the point where you are now, where it looks like things are getting better? We know how this works. It's racing is an emotional thing, right?
yeah. You know, it's you hire a rider with all the intentions of giving him the very best platform he can have to win. But when you start to lose a little bit of confidence and stuff, it's amazing how things can spiral. And it seems so simple, like, oh, just do this, or oh, just do that, and you'll fit. But it's not that simple. And people are like, well, I wonder why they didn't figure this out when they were testing in the off season. Why do they start now? Because you really only know the goalpost once you get to the race. And if you're not there, then you got to start searching. And I'm telling you, then you go through everything that you've done in the last 3 months, and you try to cram that all into 1 week. And before you know it, you lost yourself, the rider's lost, and it takes a little while to get there. But the strength we have is a crew and a group of people that can put aside the emotions and really try to figure out where can we make a step forward. And we slowly started to creep up on this, and then his confidence started to come back a little bit, and it wasn't simple. Cooper Webb was having a great season. Jet is phenomenal. And every time you don't win, you take another hit, and you got to try and pick this guy up. But I felt like from about a month ago, we really were in the ballpark, and I knew then we just had to like finesse a few things. And this weekend winning, for sure we got, it was easier. Jet had a championship on the line, no question. Did he settle? For sure. But I felt like Chase, this was the first weekend when he went out every time on the track, and he was as good as the rest of those guys, or perhaps a hair better. And his bike looked good. He looked like he could put it where he wanted. And coming back to the truck, we made zero changes all day long. And you can just see how quick the confidence comes back, you know? I just wish we had a few more races and we didn't start an outdoor series next week, but it is what it is. And we're gonna put our best foot forward and tackle that one. And for sure, we want to win, you know, but I know it's not easy. So does Honda, so does Kawasaki, so does Yamaha. And they all have good riders. The nice thing about all of that is the victory tastes better when you do win against a full field. So, yeah.
Thanks for hanging. It's probably one of the busiest times of the year. So get back to work.
Okay, thank you. See you guys. Bye-bye.
So the good thing, even though the champions are crowned at Monster Energy Supercross, plenty more racing for 2024. We'll have Pro Motocross and then the SMX Playoffs and SMX World Championship. Let's look at the Pro Motocross schedule right here. It starts May 25th at Pala in Southern California. The next weekend, we go to Hangtown in Northern California. Then we start working our way east through Colorado and High Point in Pennsylvania, all the way east of Southwick, Massachusetts, not far from Boston, in the middle of the country, including Red Bud in Michigan and Millville, Minnesota, back west to Washougal, not far from Portland, Oregon, and the stretch run, Unadilla in New York, Buds Creek in Maryland, and Ironman Raceway not far from Indianapolis, Indiana. It's going to be an awesome summer, and all the stars we've been talking about in Supercross all year, we're going to see them again in Pro Motocross. 30-second board time. We're going to run down hot topics for the season in Monster Energy Supercross, starting with the most consistent character of all. The racers were up and down, but JT, the weather pretty much threw a curve every Thursday, Friday. Didn't always affect the racing on Saturday, but we were dodging it almost all year.
Well, I was certainly dodging it down on the floor. I know, Weed, you're up in the confines of that dry booth.
Yes.
In the palace that you're in, but it was rough, treacherous. Think about San Francisco that you see there with that amazing hole shot from Chase Sexton. But this was a year of weather. You know, we've been really fortunate over the past few years, and let's just hope this summer is much drier than the months of January and February were.
Yeah, and even the non-mud races still end up being more soft and rutted than it probably looked. If you ask the riders, they were kind of over the soft conditions eventually. Speaking of riders, JT, look at how many ended up winning 250 races.
Yeah, 10 winners. And you have to wonder if that weather that we mentioned played a role in any of that. You know, Nate Thrasher wasn't a factor at many of the races, but he did get that San Diego win. Maybe that was mud-induced. But I love the parity here. I love when the gate drops, not knowing what's going to happen. And having all of these future stars grabbing a win just adds to the texture of this 250 class that does feature two different coasts.
And two different champions as well. So let's talk about our 250 champs here. It's swept by the Austria group with its KTM and Husqvarna. That also includes GasGas. I don't think many people had even thought about that until Hampshire brought it up after Nashville. Yamaha and Star Racing have been so dominant. We had a renaissance for Pro Circuit. We know what Honda's done recently with the Lawrence brothers. A pretty big breakthrough for starters, just for the brand.
Yeah, this was a huge thing for not only for Rockstar Husqvarna, but for RJ, everybody involved to get that done. Tom Vial wins for Red Bull KTM. A banner weekend for everybody associated with that KTM Austria group. So congratulations to them. Well, those are the champions, but thinking about the rider that got second in the 250 East Supercross Championship, Hayden Deegan should be mentioned here because I believe he's in the process of breaking out. Now, sure, he didn't win this title, but you look at last summer, how great he was. He goes out and wins the inaugural 250 Super Motocross World Championship playoff. And this year he gets three wins. So there are always going to be detractors from Hayden Deegan. That's just what happens when a rider is as polarizing as he is. But if you are Monster Yamaha Star Racing, you have to like this trajectory. He's improving in every single series that he participates in, and he's going to be one of the favorites for this Pro Motocross Championship we're about to enter.
We know how cutthroat it is over at Star. I'm sure they're not happy to have not won any of the 250 Supercross titles with either Deegan or Thrasher or Jordan Smith, some of the rookies in there. But I agree. I don't think it was as bad a season as people think it was for Deegan for two reasons. A, he was hurt to some degree coming into the season. He didn't tell us how badly. Now afterwards, a Yamaha press release, he said he only rode 4 or 5 days leading into Supercross. So that's grading on a curve for sure. And second, I think he's under the shadow of how successful Jet Lawrence is now. Jet Lawrence with perfect seasons, 7 titles in a row. Jet's second Supercross season, he did not win the title. He got beat by Colt Nichols. So year three maybe might be it for Deegan, or to your point, he might be coming up in just a couple of days at Pala. He could really take this thing over. I don't think you can rank title or bust this early in someone's career. Let's go to 250 SMX points. We like to do this now that we have one championship locked up. And we're just looking at combining, in this case, the East and West points together. There'll be a drop score, by the way, for the West riders because they raced one more time than East. But it's, I think, worth reminding people, JT, 22 motos, the opportunity to make up huge chunks of points is still ahead of us.
Yeah, there's so much opportunity here. And for these riders, I think there's going to be a lot of shuffling as we continue that march towards that September date in Charlotte. It's really just staying relevant. You know, if you come in second, third, or fourth, is that going to be catastrophic? Your chances, no. But you want to make sure you stay healthy, you gain points every single moto, because the difference between, let's say, third coming in and 11th coming in, now that could be a difference maker when you look at where we're going to end up when we are at that September date in Las Vegas.
Hey, man, I go back to Shimoda and Deegan taking it down to almost the last lap, fighting for every point in Los Angeles last year. Seeding in the playoffs, 2-3 more points coming in could have made all the difference there. You want to talk a big move in the 450 class here?
Yeah, I think we have to circle back to Chase Sexton and the move he made exiting 2023. Everybody was after this rider. We've now learned that even Monster Yamaha Star Racing was in the mix to hire this guy. Well, Red Bull KTM landed him, stole the Monster Energy Supercross champion away from Honda HRC. And I think we're finally seeing the fruits of that labor just show up, right? He wins the finale in Salt Lake City, and that's probably the best he'd ridden. You know, it was kind of improving. We saw him working to get through the bike. I still think he's working to get his confidence back from 2023, but these are signs of life that everybody wearing orange has to be happy with. And I think it propels him into a position to maybe challenge Jet Lawrence as we enter Hala in just a week's time.
Well, good for him and that team, because I don't feel like this is what it was advertised as. We had heard Sexton complaining. He had so many mistakes and crashes over the last couple of years. He was fast, but I think a lot of that was kind of being pointed to the Honda, and this was definitely not a see. Now that I'm not on the Honda, look what I'm doing season. He might have his chance to eventually say that. He's definitely getting better, but I don't think he or the team were signing up for a entire Supercross season of learning. I think they wanted to win the title and more races. Now it's in the better late the never category, and maybe it's just in time for motocross or SMX. We'll have to see, but definitely worth talking about there. Also, we got to talk about Adam C. and Cerullo, because it's the last time we're ever going to talk to him. You and I mentioned it in our podcast. There's so much going on a championship weekend, multiple titles, so many things to hand out. It was awesome to see that enough time could be carved out for Adam to have his moment.
Yeah, this was great, and you know, I think there's two narratives here with Adam Cincirillo. There's one that says, well, he underachieved what his potential was, where we could have seen him rise to. I subscribe to the other narrative where this is one of the most talented riders I've ever seen. He won 250 races. He was the 2019 250 national champion. He was really close to being the 2020 Pro Motocross champion. I think he had a fantastic career. I think it's one he will look back on in a few years and be extremely proud of. And yeah, not everyone is going to reach every goal that they've ever set out for, but as a rider who never came close to the accolades that Adams and Cirillo accomplished, I say job well done, fantastic career. And off the bike, maybe more importantly, he always handled himself in a way that was professional, well-respected. And I think in a many years from now, he'll look back and be more proud of that even than all the winning he did on a motorcycle. And speaking of riders that could have walked away, and thankfully or not, Eli Tomac made his return to Monster Energy Supercross this year. And listen, I was out in front of this thing. I really thought it was going to be tough for him to get back to where he was after that Achilles injury. And yes, I was drawing on my own experiences, but I've watched other riders at the very top of the sport. That is a really difficult place to live, to be the best rider in the world. And you take several months off of training, riding. Other riders get better. The Jet Lawrences, the Chase Sextons, they continue to improve while you're forced to sit on the couch. So for Eli Tomac, I thought he got better all the way through the season. Yes, it's unfortunate that he's going to miss more time now with this injury, but it's a work in progress. And hopefully he's healthy, comes back in pro motocross, races the SMX playoffs, and gets a complete off season to prepare for 2025. Then we're going to see what he's capable of. I don't believe that 8 weeks of training and preparing for Anaheim 1 was enough. And I think the results bore that out.
Yeah, I got that wrong. I believed in the Superman powers of Eli Tomac too much and thought he'll be back, he'll be ready. But, you know, you could get maybe 99% ready. It wasn't that he was terrible, but yeah, that last percentage point, I guess the gift maybe is that it gave him this hunger to want to take an entire season and an entire offseason to come back again. And I don't think a lot of people had 2025 as an expectation for Eli. So maybe that's a great gift that we'll get at least another Supercross or maybe an entire season out of him. And these seasons are so long, you tend to forget how it starts and how it ends, right? So the beginning of the year, Aaron Plessinger might have been the story. I remember we were doing the big live NBC daytime show from Detroit, and we started the show with him. He was the points leader. He was the most popular rider in the sport. He didn't even make it to the end with an injury, but we can't forget how cool this moment was to have him on top for a bit, chasing the cowboy around.
Yeah, it was amazing. You see Will Christian just in the sidebar there. I was so jealous of the interview that Will got to do because this was an incredible moment for Aaron Plessinger to right the wrong that I guess he did to himself in Detroit in 2023. But I don't think there was anybody that could not be happy for Aaron Plessinger. His personality is infectious. He's always smiling. Even in his toughest moments, he finds a way to turn it into a positive. So for him to get a win, for him to have that red plate and then carry it through after Anaheim 2, that was one of the brightest spots of this season and truly a feel-good moment that everybody could get behind.
Not feeling good in the moment was Cooper Webb, had this thumb injury, wasn't able to take it to Jet Lawrence like he had planned, but you still have to tip the visor. Look, Plessinger was good early, Tomac had his moments, Sexton had his moments, Anderson, but this was the only guy that was keeping the heat on Jet all the way to the end, and all the way to the end meant podium at the last race of the year. He's got a thumb injury, folks. He has to go in for surgery. There were rumors in the pits, JT, that if Jet just took off of the start of the main, that Webb is going to say, forget this, I'm not going to win the title. Nope. He still went out and got a podium with nine fingers.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing when you think that this could have been Cooper Webb's best riding of his career, and it's in a year that he didn't win the championship. That's really hard to kind of square that thought, but I think it is true. I think if Jet Lawrence didn't exist, we're talking about Cooper Webb's third championship and the best form he's ever been on. So I always think you have to grade things like this on a curve. You have to really take a step back and find perspective in these things, because it would be very easy for Cooper Webb to be devastated about not winning this title and now having an injury. But I think I look at it the other way. I think about where he was last summer, where he was in September, and where he is now, the form he's found, the confidence he's found, the comfort level he is on with that Monster Star Racing Yamaha. He's a completely different rider, and I expect that same rider to show up when he comes back for the SMX playoffs, and more, maybe even more importantly, what he brings us the entirety of 2025. On the other side of the Cooper Webb coin, you have riders just breaking into this class, and you have Justin Cooper and Hunter Lawrence, who, listen, these two are almost mirror images of each other. very different personalities. You know, you look at how they've gotten to this point very differently, but man, there are a lot of parallels to be drawn here. They seem to be very equal on the racetrack. So I would ask you, Weege, who gets the edge here? Who was better between these two, and whose future is brighter, if there is a difference at all?
Yeah, it's so funny to hear this comparison because they have been so close for so many years, indoors and out, 250, 450. But I think if you quiz the fans, Hunter Lawrence just seems to have so much more potential. And I think his ceiling this year might have been a little better. I just am always going to be in the Justin Cooper camp because nobody else is. I feel like every time he has a good run, second at Salt Lake City, it's a surprise. It surprises people every time. And when he gets on the podium in 450 Pro Motocross, which he will, it'll surprise people again. So I just, since no one else is chanting his name, I will just do that. Although I do feel that maybe Hunter has a little bit higher ceiling, but Justin Cooper's so consistent. And the reason we brought those two up separately is because in any normal year, they would have been considered great as rookies. It's just maybe the greatest rookie season ever has just been completed by Jet Lawrence. Jeremy McGrath, Ryan Dungey might have something to say about that, but there's not much more you can say beyond that. To be the best rider in the world in both disciplines in your first shot at them is some really, really rare air.
Yeah, and it's difficult to frame these things, and I think it gets a little dangerous to try to compare them to McGrath or Dungey, but hey, that's what we're here for. And to me, I compare this more to Jeremy McGrath than I do Ryan Dungey. And I'll tell you why. When McGrath came on the scene and broke out and won all those races in 93, I think everybody took a step back and said, oh man, we're on the edge of something here. Now, when Ryan Dungey did it in 2010, we were still talking about Ryan Villopoto, who got injured in the middle of that title fight. James Stewart was still a factor. Chad Reed was still ready to go on and win many more races in his career. It didn't feel the same. And that may not be fair to Ryan Dungey, but this, to me, this feels different. Jet Lawrence feels like he's on the edge of maybe going on a run. And that was a dangerous statement to make earlier in the season because we had to kind of pull that back in a little bit. He was tied in the championship. And it, you know, this is kind of an ebb and flow that we've gone with. But really, when I look at it big picture, it is very hard to imagine a world where Jet Lawrence does not win several championships from here. And I struggle to find someone who, in a heads-up scenario, is going to best Jet Lawrence. That is rare air, as you mentioned.
Yeah, it's really going to come down to the general, for lack of a better term, gnarliness of the sport. He might be and be the only one that can beat himself as time goes on. We'll see if riders coming out of the 250s, or even Hunter and Justin Cooper, who we were talking about before, can eventually put some pressure on him. But that's for the future. This season, we would just want to highlight those SMX points. In the 450 division, that's just going to be an exact reflection of the Monster Energy AMA Supercross standings for now. But we'll be adding motocross points in soon. And to me, what's more exciting about this class is that top 20, because then you're guaranteed in. For example, Mitchell Oldenburg, I think he's 7 points behind Colt Nichols. He's in 21st. And his team said they're going to race some motocross for the first time in a while, try to get those points and get in. These non-factory 450 guys trying to get in the playoffs last year, it was so fun to watch. I'm looking forward to that again.
Yeah, you think about the journey that Josh Hill went on to qualify for these playoffs last year, and everybody took note of that. They saw those huge checks being written at the end of the year, and they wanted to be a part of that. And I think that will influence their decision-making process this year. So again, last year was a lot of learning. I think those that missed out regretted it, and there's going to be a lot of, for lack of a better term, FOMO about trying to get into that top 20 and avoid those LCQ races, if at all, right? Just being invited is one thing, but avoiding those LCQ at those particular SMX rounds is a whole nother thing altogether.
Okay, that's going to do it for this show, but we're headed right to Pro Motocross. On this show, next week, we will have a Motocross preview edition of SMX Insider. And if you want to watch the opener for Pro Motocross, that's May 25th, Saturday. 1 o'clock will kick off Race Day Live qualifying coverage, 1 o'clock East, and 4 o'clock Eastern, the gate will drop for the motos. This is the continuation of a 31-round championship, but when it's round one of a different discipline, there isn't an atmosphere I feel in racing quite like that great unknown when the gate's dropping for the first time.
Yeah, the suspense of starting over again, it gives everybody hope. In the end, right away, Chase Sexton now has hope again to go after a championship. But let's not forget about that 50% off deal you can get for the SMX Video Pass, and no one likes a discount more than Jason Wygant. So I think that's probably your most exciting point of where we are in the season.
Yeah, you can watch that Pro Motocross opener on Peacock outside the United States, SMX Video Pass, 50% off. So sign up now and watch the opener from America, wherever you are. It's going to be awesome. We'll preview all the motocross storylines next week on this show. But so long for now.